Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Oh, yeah. 720 WGN, I'm John Landecker. It's 736. That's the Funk Brothers doing the musical track to the Supremes. You Keep Me Hanging On. Supremes, part of a show that's going to be hanging on Channel 11 and PBS. And, of course, it is courtesy of the one, the only, TJ Lubinsky. Good evening, TJ.
Hey, man, I am so glad my face is in your place. And I love that. That instrumental is terrific. Nobody uses those instrumentals like that. Perfect, man. It's a pleasure.
Hey, you know the movie The Motown Story came out about what?
Yeah.
Four or five years ago? And the soundtrack has a couple of Funk Brothers. They've got that and also Bernadette by the Four Tops. But that's something else. I want to talk to you, DJ Lubinsky. Your face in the place. Putting it down. Okay, you ready? Are you ready?
Yeah.
Putting it down profound with the sound through the hole in the wall about 4 feet tall, which I'm going to crawl. I'm the geeter with the heater, the boss with the sauce. You know who I'm talking about, don't you?
Of course, Jerry Blavitt. Absolutely.
Oh, man. Absolutely.
But see, I always, with the artists on this show, though, because, you know, I'm on the air, too, and we had our own terms of endearment, so we would say the tall, tantalizing, toe-tapping, terrific Temptations, right? Instead of Martha and the Vandellas, it's for all the fellas, Martha and the Vandellas, or Diane and the Girls, Mighty Miracles. You know what I'm talking about.
Heck yeah, I know what you're talking about. But who are you? Where do you come from? What's going on here? I mean, I've been watching.
My wife has been asking me that for years.
not seriously, but you're not old enough to know the music you're promoting.
Yeah, I don't know. I heard it the same way. Where I was, I grew up in New Jersey, which was between New York and Philadelphia, of course.
That's what I've heard.
Between those two influences. Yeah, so between those two, between those two influences, there were still boss jocks that were around, not unlike Dick Biondi in Chicago,
right,
who played their own records. Now, I picked them up later when they were on the oldie stations, but I still heard them play a record, and I'd go out to the record store and I'd have to own that record. And
so you felt
eventually I wanted...
Go ahead, I'm sorry. What, you felt an affinity for it right away. You connected with it.
Oh, you know, there was a tune by the Miracles called Mickey's Monkey.
Yep.
And, you know, I remember sneaking into a nightclub at 16 years old with a bunch of friends, and they're like, why are we going to an oldies nightclub? Why don't we go to this hot place, you know, blah, blah. I said, trust me, this is going to be good for us. So we walk into this. All of a sudden you hear the beginning with Smokey saying, all right, is everybody ready? Yay! And the crowd was full. The lights were all, like, between, you know, different colors.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a stage. You walked in onto a stage. And because I knew the record, I went, a one, a two, a one, two, and took my jacket and threw it off the stage and started to do Mickey's Monkey. And it was like I had arrived. That was my sound. That was me. And followed it ever since. Couldn't get into radio. Really wanted to be in radio more than anything else, but the radio station said, no, you don't pick the records. No, you won't talk after every other song. You just have to do what we say.
That's right.
And so I was kind of pissed off about all that.
Yeah,
I said,
don't blame you.
I'm gonna do my own thing. And that's when I went to public television, and I said, listen, as long as I bring you money, will you give me some airtime? And they said, yeah, you're going to bring us money over everything else that we're doing. I said, yeah, I am. But just give me 2 hours on a Saturday night and watch what happens. And we started with the old doo-wop artists and the old doo-wop great music. And sure enough, 2.5 hours later, it was the greatest, biggest fundraiser that station had. And then that went to different markets. And then they listened to me.
But I got to ask you, though. I mean,
it's the chagrin of the oldies people.
It's one thing for anybody to say, okay, you know, I want to do this, and basically you're out of nowhere promoting a concert that you yourself, I'm guessing, have to put together. You have to contact everyone. You've got to put together the whole, you know, the entire list of all the ingredients that it takes to put on a show. First of all, I mean, the artists. Then you have to have, you know, backup singers and musicians and lights and a venue and on and on and on. I mean, it's not just like, hi, I'm here. I got a great idea. Give me 2 hours Saturday night. I mean, how'd you pull all that together?
Well, at that time, these stations did a lot of local production, so they all had their own studios. So that was the venue. And it was just a question of calling each artist that I could get, depending on the show we were trying to focus on. It was in the early days, I was really hardcore doo-wop. So yeah. In South Florida, where I grew up, you could get any number of doo-wop groups to come in, and they'd sing. And to, instead of giving away like a tote bag or something, we gave away... there was two or three CD sets that were out at the time that were very good. And the audience just responded like you can't imagine. Then, once that became so big, I went to Pittsburgh. And I hadn't realized Pittsburgh was much of an oldies market, but in fact it is.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the bosses there told me, they said, listen, you're going to be a national producer. And I said, no, I don't want to be a national producer. I want to be just a fundraiser and a program director, and I'll be happy for the rest of my life. And they said, you're crazy. You're nuts because you have this genie in a bottle, and you're going to take this nationally. We're going to do a big show. And so it was my bosses at that time who really encouraged me to figure out a way to make it a national format. And even then, PBS didn't believe in it. I still had to go to three or four markets to prove myself.
But sure.
Once it happened, it happened.
It sure did. We're talking to T.J. Lubinsky. You've seen him on Channel 11 over the years, numerous times, raising money for PBS, presenting great doo-wop, rock and roll from the 60s, R&B, 70s, the whole, all of it, all of the great tunes. And there's a great show coming up this weekend, and we're going to talk about that when we come back on 720 WGN. Yes, there's a man who lives a life of danger, and he is T.J. Lubinsky. 746, John Landecker at 720 WGN. T.J. Lubinsky's on the phone with us. You know him as the producer and creator of the My Music specials on PBS that have been going on for, wow, at least 20 years, right? Just about?
Yeah, just about. A little more than that, 25. Yeah.
You're from the East Coast, that Philadelphia, New Jersey corridor, so to speak. And you and I have some mutual friends who worked in broadcasting on the East Coast. In fact, I spent some time in Philadelphia on the air at Wibbage with... Joan Iagra, High Lit, Joey Reynolds,
to mention
a few. So I was looking you up...
Absolutely.
I was looking you up on the internet. Your grandfather... Tell me if this information is true. Your grandfather founded a record label?
Savoy Records in North New Jersey, yep. That was him.
That was him. Your father operated a New Jersey radio station?
Out of the house that they lived in Newark. And
no
also
kidding.
He ran the record store and the tube business. You know, if you needed an RX-59872 for your radio, that's where you'd go.
And how about Doctor Who?
Well, it's for Chicago, too, would make sense of Doctor Who. I was always a big fan of the TV show. Huge of the classic years, particularly with Tom Baker. And I would go to television stations. There was a time where at the end of their run, the television stations had to throw away the tapes. And I would literally say, hey, do you mind if I take these? Or sometimes I have to slip a guy a few bucks or whatever. And I kept all the 2-inch tapes of the American versions of these shows that had a little different presentation to them. They were announced by a great actor named Howard Da Silva. And And I loved those. Nobody else wanted them, but I kept them all in my personal collection. And eventually, when it came to putting them out in DVD, the BBC had no copies, but I had them all, and I licensed them back to them. So you know, it's funny how things just come around that way.
It truly is. And speaking of things coming around, let's talk about the show that's coming up. It's What's Happening, Baby, which originally was broadcast, I guess, on commercial television in 1965.
CBS. Wow. 1965.
Tell us about the show. Tell us about the process of getting it ready for rebroadcast.
Well, you know, I had worked with the Ed Sullivan Library for years to bring that to public television and a whole bunch of specials, but we also syndicated a lot of the original shows. And that had me in the vaults where a lot of this stuff was kept. And one day I'm going through the vault and I see a tape. Now, you have to understand, I am beyond fanatical for Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. The Miracles, to me, are everything, and they still are. They were my first group, and to this day, they're my go-to group for everything. And there was a tape there that said, Ooh, Baby, Baby, the Miracles. Now, I'd never seen any footage of them doing Ooh, Baby, Baby prior to that. There was maybe a Mickey's Monkey, or there maybe was Going to a Go-Go, or Tracks of My Tears, but I'd never seen Ooh, Baby, Baby. And, you know, my hands started shaking, and I was able to get the tape to play at the local place I was at, and it was an amazing performance, which was recorded at the Brooklyn Fox on the Murray the K Show. So that led to finding some other tapes that had other acts that were recorded on that show. And then finally we found the whole tape of how the show was originally made and presented. It was paid for the Office of Economic Advantage, which basically was to get young kids to stay in school through summer jobs and then go back to school and try to get into college. And so we found this tape, 2-inch tape. They're big, they're clunky. This one hadn't been played since 1965, and so it had to be pieced together, literally minute by minute, it had to be pieced together, and then we had to do that. And then once that was done, then the sound work began. But, you know, when I started seeing performances from, you know, the Temptations, Mary Wells, Little Anthony and the Imperials, Dionne Warwick, Four Tops, and on and on and on and on, it was like this treasure trove, because I'd never seen these acts in their prime in such a way before. It wasn't like a Tammy show where there's a lot of screaming, crowding audience. This thing was young kids. When you walked into the Brooklyn Paramount and what was happening in life at that time, and Latino, black, white, didn't matter. They just all loved music, and that's what brought everyone together.
So this has all been revamped, remastered, and video and audio, and is happening this weekend on PBS, and it's called It's What's Happening, Baby.
It's What's Happening, Baby, yeah, Murray the K, yeah.
Now, for people who don't know, explain who Murray the K was.
I think he was not unlike Dick Biondi from everything I know. You know, Dick was wild and crazy and, you know, did all this amazing stuff. I think he was a lot like that. He wasn't just a DJ who stood there and introduced a group and then left stage and then introduced a group and left stage. I mean, I adored Alan Freed for what he did for the early R&B acts and for rock and roll, coining the phrase rock and roll. But then, before we had Cousin Brucey in New York, who also is synonymous with this music, mm-hmm. there was someone in the middle. And that middle guy was Murray the K, who was an old vaudevillian showman. He was a guy who loved to basically play the vaudeville circuit. And he brought all that with him when he started putting on these live shows at the Brooklyn Paramount, and just amazing. The acts and he, they would dance together, and he was invited to dance by the acts. Very polished, very smooth, at a time when the DJs were really part of the show, where they would change outfits before every act would come on, and things like that. I mean, really cool stuff.
You know, I've known Dick Biondi for decades, and at one point he had a whole annual schedule of record hops at various locations, fundraisers for this, you know, an archdiocese, whatever, a high school, and he changed his He changed his outfit so many times during these record hops, it was unbelievable. You're absolutely right. I mean, there'd be a rhinestone jacket, then there'd be another jacket with like a satin jacket, then there'd be a jacket with logos on it. It was a whole choreographed event, really.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was part of the entertainment. It was part of being a performer,
right?
Versus just being a jock,
right?
And also, you know, on this show, I interview the artists. So Mary Wilson, for example, mm-hmm. the last Supreme. This was recorded 2 days before her passing.
Wow!
And she's talking about what it was like to sing the songs and all the plans she had for her future. And then 2 days later, she's gone.
Yeah.
Very sad.
Very sad. Some folks may recognize the Murray, the K name, and the moniker, the Fifth Beatle. He was on the air in New York when the Beatles came to America, and the British invasion in the early 60s when they're going to the Ed Sullivan Show. And somehow the two met and I guess got along, and he earned that name, and the Beatles never disputed it, at least as far as his promotions were concerned.
I think what really happened, and that got a little bigger than the truth was, but that's always the way a story is.
True.
Is he was with them on some junket, and they were trying to get on the plane. The plane people, security, were saying, "Who's this fifth guy? You know, you can't have five guys on board." And George said, "Oh, he's our fifth Beatleman." And that's how that started that whole thing.
That is actually a story?
Yeah.
Wow.
And he also did, he was the first to do, for some reason uncredited for this, but he was really the first in New York, New Jersey on WOR to bring progressive rock to the radio and FM.
Yeah.
So, and all those later groups like, you know, the Doors and everything.
So the All-Star 1965 Music Celebration, groundbreaking, It's What's Happening, Baby. And I got a list here of some of the people that include Ray Charles, Dionne Warwick, The Righteous Brothers, The Supremes, Marvin Gaye, Johnny Rivers, The Miracles, Herman's Hermits, The Temptations, Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells. It sounds awesome. Just reading about it, I got to say.
Yeah, it is awesome.
How long is it?
It's a glimpse into what life was back then.
What's the running time on that?
The whole presentation is about 2 hours, and that includes interviews that I do with all the artists who are still with us,
right,
talking about how important Murray the K was. You know, Dionne Warwick comes on, and she says, you know, everybody else in the country, Scepter was pushing them to play the other side of the record in those days, what we would call the B-side.
Yeah.
And so people were playing the wrong side of the record. And they said, turn it over. You got to hear this one. And Murray was the guy who turned it over, broke the record in New York. And he did the same for all these groups.
What was the song?
And I forget the B-side, but the A-side was Walk On By. And that was the one.
Yeah, that definitely was the one. Well, thank you, TJ.
And, you know, so it's great.
Yeah. Anything else you want to add?
No, I really thank you, and of course, always love coming to Chicago, and just very excited that people have a chance to see this on Channel 11 this Saturday. Yeah.